on your part.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm your host, JT Ayers. All things track and field related, equipment, blocks, spikes, flags to zone off so no one gets hit in the discus ring. On Track and Field is where you need to go. And yeah, I say that because that's happened at my place before, and it's really unfortunate. On Track and Field saves lives. You heard me. They save lives. OnTrackandField.com is who I partner with. I work with them. I love them. I'm also a head coach. I use them for all my needs for equipment, for blocks, for pole vault poles, and pits. Large pits. They're working with me right now and help me get a high jump pit and a pole vault pit. And I'm deeply grateful because their stuff's great. And also their prices are unbeatable. OnTrackandField.com. Do yourself a favor. Help your team. Be a great leader. Go to OnTrackandField.com. With me is Dr. Jordan Hart. She's a sports chiropractor and athletic trainer. She served as the head of sports medicine in Lancaster in Texas. We're not going to hold that against her. But that's home to one of the most premier high school track and field programs in the country. Also beg to differ. Just kidding. And then she has a master's in athletic training, but this is what's interesting about her. I went on Twitter because I was so frustrated with shin splints. And I literally just said, I need an expert. Who's an expert in shin splints? And no joke, the TTFCA, which is the Texas All the Coaches Association, got together and Dr. Hart put together a presentation all about shin splints. And they recommended her. I got in contact with her and she said, absolutely, let's get on a podcast for 20 minutes and let's save the world through shin splints and all the issues that come with that. So Jordan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
All right. What the heck is a shin splint?
So to put it simply, to keep things really simple, shin splints are essentially pain along the tibia. The tibia is the larger bone in your lower leg. And most of the time, this pain shows up along the inside of that bone in the lower third. To get technical with it, if we talk about medically what's going on, oftentimes it starts as a bit of a strain on the muscle. Some of the muscles that are involved there. It's typically classified as a chronic overuse condition. I love track and field, but it is a chronic overuse sport. it's classic for that. So this is a chronic overuse condition. And essentially what happens is it starts as a muscle strain, but because the muscles that are involved share fibers with the bone that it lays on top of, eventually it progresses and those bone fibers get involved and it becomes inflammation on a bone. So that's part of the reason it becomes so painful and it can be such a pain to actually get rid of.
So you're the professor of emergency care and injury management in the doctorate in chiropractic program at Parker University in Dallas, Texas. So you carry a lot of credibility. So this next question, I know you can answer. Why do some kids get it and some kids don't?
It's a loaded question. It's definitely a loaded question. Kids are all unique. They're biomechanically unique. They're characteristically unique. They're just unique in every aspect. And so it's kind of a hard question to answer, but I think a lot of it has to do with if they're involved in other sports, if they're conditioned for this sport, if they're new to the sport, if they're transitioning from another sport. I think a lot of it has to do with their prior experience in the sport and if they have an athletic background. I think that has something to do with it. But to be honest, it's a loaded question. And because there's so many potential causes for shin splints, there's just as many potential answers to that question.
Well, if you've been coaching for any amount of time, you know some kids genetically are going to be predisposition to have an IT band issue or a hamstring issue or a hip flexor issue or shin splints. Like it just seems to be like one of those things, but as a good coach, we're all trying to help our athletes be as successful as possible. So when something flares up like a shin splint, we're going to deal with it. So I know there's misconceptions because as the years have gone on, it's just being a coach myself, I have misconceptions. Like for instance, is it just the shoes that are causing shin splints? Because a lot of kids wear Vans and Crocs. Is it the kid that went from soccer to track and track back to soccer? and that overuse? Is that the issue? Because they're changing different environments. I run on a hard surface as a track athlete, but then as a soccer athlete, I'm on turf or grass. So I guess, what are some of the misconceptions about shin splints that we should be aware of?
So some of the misconceptions, especially coming from the track and field world, I ran track in high school. I ran my freshman year of college before an injury sidelined me, and I struggled massively with shin splints. So I think some of the misconceptions that there are is, number one, that it's a rite of passage for every athlete in track and field. That's just a misconception. It's not a normal part of the sport. It shouldn't be considered normal. So another misconception is that, you know, it's not a serious injury. It's not a big deal, and that you can run through it. And I think those are some of the big things that are common ideas and common thought processes in track and field, but that can actually lead to a worsening of the condition or the onset of other issues and complications along with that.
So are we supposed to just put these kids on the side and just ice their shins?
So I am a big, big, big proponent of prehab. Are you familiar with prehab?
Oh yeah.
So prehab, in case you're unaware, it's basically essentially drawing up a program that has a specific intent. So, and part of what I presented on to the Texas Track and Field Coaches Association was how simple it can be to implement just little exercises, little deviations in whether it's your warm-up, whether it's your weight room, or whether it's even in, you know, your post-workout app, wherever it fits into your program, little things that you as coaches can do and that you can weave into your daily activities that can actually serve the purpose of helping offset injuries like shin splints. So prehab programs are a massive thing that I am hugely in support of and that I think are actually easier to implement than a lot of people realize. It just takes a little bit of education and a little bit of understanding, and it can be something that can be hugely impactful for your program.
A lot of this podcast, I'm going to play devil's advocate because I feel like I know some of these things, but I do not want to proclaim that I'm an expert like you in any of these things. What are some of those exercises? Am I worried about ankle stiffness? Am I worried about like tiny little hops or foot strengthening drills where they're walking barefoot around the area in different positions? Are we also thinking about rolling out the calves and making sure that the back of the calf doesn't have a lot of knots that are giving excess strain? By the way, I say this because someone told me I was dumb for saying that. So I don't know what those exercises are. Can you give us some prehab things we can do with our athletes?
Absolutely. So one of the key things that I think is often missing, and it's so, so simple from most programs, is adding in specific eccentric exercises. So when I work a muscle concentrically, like the biceps, for instance, we all know what a bicep curl looks like. That's working that muscle and it's normal movement. It's normal range of motion. But if I slowly lower the barbell or whatever it is out of a bicep curl, I'm then working that muscle eccentrically in its lengthening phase. So a couple of the key muscles that are typically involved with shin splints are the soleus and the tibialis posterior. The soleus is that it makes up a large portion of actually the lower leg, but it's underneath the calf. So the important part of the soleus is it doesn't cross the knee joint like the calf does. So oftentimes it doesn't get the same amount of work that the calf does, which can lead to weakness, which is ultimately an underlying issue that leads to shin splints. So a super, super easy way to work the soleus is essentially to do a toe raise with a very slow lowering down of the heels. Get your athletes to where their foot is stable enough to do that exercise both 2 feet at a time and then progress to 1 foot at a time. And then take that to a surface like the bleachers or some sort of platform so that they can do that exercise and dip below neutral. That's when they're really getting into eccentrically working the soleus. And that's when you're really going to see results and you're going to see a deduction or a reduction in the amount and the incidence of shin splints and a lot of different lower leg complaints, actually. So that's a really simple one. I think ankle mobility, ankle stiffness is something you mentioned. Even adding in, and I saw this on a tweet of yours before, ankle pumps, ABCs, things like that. Prioritizing mobility is way underrated. It's extremely important. And it helps with everything from shock absorption to increasing the proprioception of the ankle, which is helping the ankle and the foot know where they are in space. We're never really on 2 feet in track and field. We're always on 1 foot. So balance exercises and progressing balance exercises is another simple, easy way to add prehab into your daily workouts. But, you know, there's easy ways to take a simple form drill and take the shoe off, make that a barefoot balance drill, and turn that also into a prehab exercise.
Wow. I am so glad you're on this podcast. You are proving to be a very good interview. Can I talk to you about shoes? And I think this might be another loaded question. It seems like at the years that I've been coaching, shoes have changed. Like when they train, they got great shoes. They have all the different technology, expensive shoes, and then we put them into spikes. There's not a lot of support there. So coaches are typically being very cognizant about, all right, when do we put them into spikes? When we put them back into good racing shoes, like an Asics or whatever. Now, what about when they're walking around school all day and they have no support? They're wearing Vans, Crocs, or some other variation of terrible shoe. Is that adding to this plague of shin splints?
Absolutely. When we talk about footwear, we can't just pigeonhole it to the footwear that they're wearing during practice. We have to look at the footwear that they're wearing all throughout the day. And Crocs are the new epidemic that we have that I'm really not a fan of. No shade to Crocs, but at the same time, if I really want to maximize the health and the potential offset for injury from my athlete, I got to get them out of Crocs. I got to get them out of Vans. I have to get them into a more supportive shoe throughout the entirety of the day. Because what happens is, if you got a kid who's in class all day long and they're wearing Crocs for 8 hours a day, and then they're coming to school to the track and they're putting on a supportive shoe for a bit before they transition into their spikes, they've basically been in a prolonged posture of no support all day long. And then you put them into a shoe for warmups or for whatever in a more supportive shoe, and they're like, okay, I feel good. Then you put them into a spike and they go back into that posture of not so much support typically. So yes, absolutely. What they wear during the day plays a massive role in, it can prevent injuries from getting better, and it can actually set them up to have a higher likelihood of incurring injury.
Wow. Okay. Well, now this podcast is going to be broadcasted to every team everywhere, including mine, because you just helped every coach in the country help their kids put better shoes on. Let's go back to one of those questions that you mentioned earlier. And you said, you know, it is overuse. The kids are, and the athletes are having to deal with these lower, you said tibia issue. So are we able to continue having kids practice through letting pain be the guide? I mean, typically a track coach will say, all right, I understand your pain. Let me know if it gets worse, but we're going to keep training. Or we're going to find an alternative to the training that we had for the goal of the day. What do you recommend for track coaches to do when a kid is feeling a lot of shin splint pain?
So I'm going to try to break this down and make it as simple as I can. When I get an athlete from the athletic training room side of things, when I get an athlete that comes in with shin splints, I'm going to put them into one of four categories or phases, if you will. A phase one shin splint athlete, they have pain with what we call palpation, or with, you know, feeling along that ridge of that tibia. And that's really all the pain that they have. So maybe they don't discover this pain unless they're foam rolling afterwards, or they're doing some type of therapy where they're applying pressure to the shin. Then they start noticing, oh, that kind of hurt. That's a phase one athlete. At that phase, I actually recommend get them started on a prehab program if they haven't already, because they've started on the track of headed towards shin splints, and evaluate their footwear. Make those recommendations. A phase two athlete now has pain after they're running. When they're done with their workout, they're like, man, my shins hurt. These are the ones that start to trickle into the athletic training room. I don't often get a hold of them in phase one. Usually it's phase two when they hobble in and they're like, can I get an ice cup? You know, can I start doing that? Again, that is where I'm going to start talking to coach. And I'm going to say, coach, can we talk about maybe making some modifications? Because this athlete, they've started shin splints, and if we make modifications now, I can dramatically decrease the amount of time that I need to potentially take them out of the sport, or decrease their amount of time on the track to get them back successfully and to get them through this. So that's a phase two athlete. A phase three has pain during and after a workout. This is where the red flags start to go off. This is an athlete that's either going to go real far down the shin splint track and they're going to struggle with it potentially the entirety of the season, or we get them into a program, into better shoes, into, you know, developing a plan for them so that we can offset the future or the progression of that. And then a phase four athlete, they've got pain with absolutely everything that they do. They wake up in the morning and they've got pain. They can't walk between classes without pain. And that's a massive red flag. And that's someone that I am on high alert for a potential stress fracture. So that's how I grade my athletes. And hopefully that's an easier way for coaches to kind of keep in their head, okay, if I can narrow down when they have pain, I can help determine where we are on the scale of severity. So as far as athletes continuing to practice through pain, I think in phase one and two, you can do that with modifications. When you get into three and four, you're probably going to have to take them off the track and you're probably really going to have to make a plan B from there.
Yeah, they're not going to get a quality of practice if they're unable to even apply force to the track. I mean, right, with a shin splint, if that pain is not allowing them to be good in track, they're not going to get faster. You got to run fast to get fast. So in mind with some of the just phases that you talked about, how long does it typically take for a shin splint to heal? I mean, what can I tell parents and that athlete, depending on what phase they're in, but how long would it take it if I did the best prehab in the world? What typically, how long is somebody out for something like this?
So I'm not going to say out because I have found, like I said, phase one, phase two, I'm going to work with coach and I'm going to try to keep them somewhat involved in practice while making the modifications that I feel are necessary to prevent the progression of that. But in general, I'm going to say if I catch somebody early with early symptoms, it'll take me with a good prehab program and maybe some additional therapy on the side for that, 2 weeks. If someone progresses into phase three, phase four, we're looking at potentially up to 6 months. But in general, I think the majority of shin splints can be addressed and tackled within 2 weeks to 4 months, which I realize is a massive time frame, but it all just depends on where they're at in their progression. And then you get into factors like what all is involved in their care. Are they working on their own to figure this out? Do you have an athletic trainer? Because not every school does. Do they have outside care and help? What's their nutrition like? Are they following your rules about no Crocs? You know, it comes into the athlete has to be held accountable for their recovery as well.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you a question just out of pure ignorance. I train youth kids. I don't see a lot of shin splints with youth kids. I don't see a lot of injuries of youth kids mostly anyways, probably because they're output isn't that high and they're not really doing overuse because they're doing a lot of different activities. What can we do with youth athletes to kind of mitigate some of these issues later on in life? Is there stuff we can do by asking them to be barefoot or do lots of different activities or things they can do young so they're not going to have this, you know, this issue later on in life?
I think expanding the idea because, you know, track is, we do a lot of things linearly. We do a lot of things in a straight line. And I think the earlier you can implement things that are more dynamic motions, but also doing things in different directions, adding in diagonal exercises and getting your athletes moving and challenging their bodies in different ways than just that linear direction helps. Training deceleration is hugely important as well in helping prevent injuries. And also training things like so much of track and field is learning how to absorb shock. So starting to train that early, and even for your athletes that maybe aren't jumpers, maybe helping them learn too, even your sprinters, help them learn how to properly decelerate and how to absorb shock better. So putting them through plyometric drills and retraining those biomechanics. So I think that the more dynamic an individual is as they grow and as they develop, the better set they are to lead a healthier life or to be healthier in their sport. So that being said, I'm a big proponent of cross training and of them participating in multiple sports. I think it really does strengthen them in different ways. And we could have a whole separate conversation about the early specialization of things, but I understand that that's the world we live in now. A lot of our kids, they start out with a specialization and they progress through that. So if that's the way it's going to be, diversify what you expose them to with regard to workouts, proprioception training, and different types of shock absorption.
Awesome. That is fantastic. I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast and helping us. This is going to be wildly popular. People are going to want to know more about this. And you gave us a lot of stuff. And even a coach that's been doing this for almost two decades, there's a lot of stuff that I just learned that I did not know. And I wish I had. I wrote down some notes just for my track team. So this afternoon, we're going to have a little talk and we're going to do some prehab stuff. And I'm going to show them that my intentionality as a coach is for their benefit and their health. So thank you for so much. Now, where else can we find more information about you, what you're doing? Let us know about social media. And I mean, give me some of the more information I can find out more about you and what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. So I wear a lot of hats, but one of my goals right now is to basically be of service to the world of track and field, to the world of sports medicine, and however I can contribute to helping athletes have longer, more successful, healthier careers, wherever I can help coaches learn how to implement sports medicine strategies to help the success of their team and the health of their athletes. That's what I'm about. So you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Dr. Hart DFW, Dr. Hart DFW, like Dallas, Fort Worth. I know I'm from Texas, but I love California too. So, but that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. And I am open to any and all conversations. If there's coaches looking for guidance on a prehab program, they don't know where to start, please give me a shout. I would love to help in any way that I can.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And just want to make sure I mention that this podcast is brought to you by ontrackandfield.com and relaybatons.com, where you can receive custom made batons that are competition ready. But I actually don't use them for competitions. I typically use them to give awards out at the end of the year, kind of award ceremonies and things like that. But as a gift, we're going to send Dr. Hart just a mug that says On Track and Field on it. And she can keep, especially in Dallas right now, because it's like completely frozen, you can keep your liquid hot and cold and you can be happy. So thank you for coming on the podcast. And without further ado, a man who's never felt shin splints because he's just an absolute rock and a legend is our CEO, Steve. Steve, you and your beautiful voice, take us away.
Thanks to our guest, Dr. Jordan Hart, for joining us on this week's On Track and Field podcast. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved and meet and competition legal relay batons, water bottles and tumblers. Great for team branding, fundraisers, meet awards and coaches gifts. And by OnTrackandField.com, cross country and track's one-stop source for everything you need for a successful season. Competition gear, bikes, training equipment, and shoes. OnTrackandField.com has everything you need. And you can save up to 50% when you use the word Track Talk at checkout. Some exclusions apply. And make sure to check out our new website, OnTrackRunning.com, your new source for competition and training shoes, featuring Saucony, Brooks, On Running, New Balance, Asics, and Hoka shoes and spikes. OnTrackRunning.com. And make sure to follow us on our socials at OnTrack, the letter N, Field, at On Track and Field on Twitter and the Gram,